Now there take place no end of weddings. Grandma Flance has been assuaged and he's going to marry Gawain's sister. Gawain is going to marry Orgeluse. And these defeated knights are going to marry other ladies of the castle. And there's a great festival of love. Love in the moonlight among the pavilions, says Wolfram. And Parsifal is there. And his Conduiramours is not there. And he thinks, should I participate in this event? And he says, how can I participate when my heart is somewhere else and my eyes behold all this joy? I will leave. This is the great moment of Parsifal. In the loyalty to his love, in the midst of all this seduction and temptation, he is not seduced. And on the other hand, in combat, he is never afraid. He is without fear and without desire, in the name, however, of love. You remember the temptation of the Buddha under the tree? The temptation of desire, the temptation of fear, and he transcended. This is exactly the same temptation. And Parsifal, not in the way of world escape, but in the way just of world attack, living in the world, has reached that position. He rides forth. He has not ridden very far when he sees coming at him a knight in the most gorgeous armor, woven of all kinds of metallic mysteries by gnomes in the Oriental mountains. We know who it is. These two men, says Wolfram, were born of battle noise. They say, says he, when a lion is born, the lion is born dead, and it is wakened to life by the sound of its father's roar. These men were wakened to life by battle roar, and they go at each other. And they are at each other. And each is very angry because he's never fought with a knight so powerful. And the antagonist is from the Orient. He has an army of 15 different nations, none speaking the language of any other, hiding in the woods. But he's ridden forth on solo adventure. And finally, in the battle, the sword that Parsifal is using breaks on the other's head. And the Oriental knight says, well, no fame comes to me from dealing with a man without a sword. Let's sit down and talk. They begin talking, and they realize they're brothers. This is Fairphiz, and the other is Parsifal. Fairphiz, before they find this out, says, I've never met a man of such courage. If you tell me your name, my voyage will not have been in vain. And Parsifal says, am I to tell you my name out of fear? And Fairphiz tosses his sword away. He says, I'll tell you mine. My name is Fairphiz of Anjou. And he takes his helmet off, and there's the mottled face. While that battle was taking place, Fairphiz was calling the name of his queen and of other ladies who had given him elements of his costume. Parsifal is losing force until he calls the name Conduiramours, his wife, and she comes to him in force across the miles, and it is in her under her protection, you might say, that he achieves his victory up to the time of the breaking of the sword. Now these two, says Wolfram, and this is a very important theme and line in his work, he said, we might say that two men were fighting there, but they are one. They are one, the sons of Gahmuret, each doing the other and himself much harm through courage and through loyalty. These are the two worlds of Islam and Christendom, the two daughter worlds of the Hebrew world. Gahmuret and these two, these three now, are one. And there's a great discussion here of the one that is three and the one that is two and how the two fight. But The action comes from the fighting. They must not quit. Each in his honor is in combat with the other. Well, of course, all this has already been observed in the castle through that magic mirror. So when the two, oh, by the way, Fairfax says, come on, visit my armies. And Parzival says, well, first let's go to Arthur's court. There, it's just right by here, lots of tents and pavilions and lots of beautiful ladies and gallant knights. Beautiful ladies, says Fairfax, I'm for the castle. So they go to the Arthurian castle. Well, quite a reception for Fairfax, and the ladies gather around him and think he's just marvelous. And Wolfram says, probably because of his interesting complexion. they all say what a wonderful knight and how loyal he must be to his beloved, but they would all like very much to destroy that loyalty. And so Arthur and all prepare for another round table party, welcoming Fairfax and Parzival again. Party is prepared, engaged in. Big horse comes along with a strange figure on it. Who is it? Kundry again. Kundry gets off the horse, bows weeping before Parzival, begs for forgiveness for what she told him before, and proclaims him the Grail King. The point is, he achieved it not in direct quest. He achieved it through his character, through his loyalties, through his courage, and through his one-pointed resolution, and the integrity of character right through. Furthermore, this news has been announced to Conduirmors, who with their two little sons, one of them Lohengrin, and the other, Caradhias, his name is, they're on the way. But she says, now we come to the wonderful, crazy resolution, you must come to the castle with a male companion. And Parzival says, I will ask Fairfax. Many a Christian cannot get to the Grail Castle, but this Muslim can. So these two noble men, here's the matter of character that goes way beyond anything like sectarian divisions, they ride with Kundry to the castle where they are welcomed. And when Parzival sees the king, he asks the question, the king is healed, and Parzival becomes the Grail King. Look what has happened. He has become the Grail King without inheriting the wound. He is not wounded. That is to say, it is possible to be in that position entire. This is a very optimistic work about the powers of man.